it's really the implementation of research, not just reading it, but putting it into practice. I think if people really start to put into practice what they read and really understand it and apply it to their patients, I think that'll really improve our profession.
Dilly Dilly, we went to Philly. Stopped by Thomas Jefferson University for a live show with students from a bunch of schools in the city of brotherly love. Here's what it sounded like. The first round is brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, where PTs go for certification in blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to provide it. Check them out online at owensrecoveryscience.com.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
This is
the PT Pinecast.
May I introduce?
Please allow me to introduce you to.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, dilly dilly, because we're in Philly. Yes, doing first time we've done this, doing multiple schools for the pod at one time. So we're going to bring up representatives from each one of those schools, and we're going to talk some PT, and then we might have a couple of beers. Is that true? Like how the students were like, are the professors around? Yeah, I'll probably do that. All right, first up, David Lagerstedt is assistant professor of PT at University of the Sciences, a current candidate for the president of the sports section. Ooh, maybe in the presence of royalty. A researcher with over 30 publications on knee and shoulder injuries, coordinator of the musculoskeletal tract at University of Sciences. Let's hear it for David.
Am I supposed to wave?
You wave because one day you might be president of the sports section. Some of these students out here want to get, in with the guy in charge. Thanks for coming out. Love of the tie.
Us.
I got to paint the picture because it's a radio thing. You've got the anatomically correct skeletons playing multiple sports because you're going for the be president of the sports section.
Sports PT.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So president of the sports section, which means you must have been in the sports section for a while.
Yes, I've been in the sports section about 20 years now.
Yeah.
So I started out when I was a student, much like them, and started attending CSM and got to know some of the guys in sports PT at happy hour.
What?
So
you start to notice themes when you listen to my podcast and meeting people. A lot of times that is where the decisions get made. I mean, I was taught that in school. We'd take a couple business classes. It's like, know how to play golf. I don't care if you're bad at it. Because a lot of decisions get made on the golf course or at the 19th hole, is the networking event after golf.
That's where everybody gets a little bit more friendly.
Gets friendly, yeah. Not when I'm shanking balls into the woods, though.
No.
So sports section, why should someone be a member? I'll let you can pitch it.
Well, the sports section is, it's a great organization where you get to have an opportunity to work with PTs who are involved in athletics. So whether that's at the professional level, at the college level, high school level, or even at the recreational level.
Like me, I call that weekend warrior.
The weekend warrior. So it gives you an opportunity to really kind of delve into some of that kind of higher performance athlete type environment, and it gives you an opportunity to kind of interact with those individuals. We have networking events. We have a teammates type of event that
talk about that. We've mentioned before. We had Blaze on the show before, but talk about the teammate event and what that actually entails.
Yeah. So basically, it's an opportunity for students or young professionals to be kind of matched up with a seasoned PT to discuss a little bit about how they got into sports PT, potentially how they may be able to move into areas of PT that they might be interested in.
Right.
You know, a lot of sports students are interested in moving into that professional realm. And so there's opportunities to kind of learn how to do that or how to maybe take those stepping stones maybe at a high school level to a collegiate level, maybe then to the sports, to the professional level.
Because as you mentioned, a lot of people want to get involved at the professional level or collegiate level in sports specifically, but the cooler the job is, the less they're going to, they can pay for it because they know how cool it is.
Yeah.
But also the harder it's going to be to get that job.
Of course.
Right. So now you can actually pick the brains of the people who've gotten there.
Yes.
And I took great advice from Stefania Bell, who works for TV station ESPN.
ESPN, yeah.
And she said, have, short-term goals, long-term visions.
Yes.
And I literally still think about that exact phrase that she told me. Where do you want to go? What's your vision? I don't know if you can have a long, you know, she said, have a long-term vision, but a short-term goal. And she kind of told her story on this show and, you know, at a couple different student conferences about how she actually got to where she was. It took a lot of steps to get there. So having something like Teammates where you get paired up is a really great beginning point.
Right. And sometimes it's just stepping out, right? And stepping out and just making those jumps, you know, and making those little introductions, you know, just like you introduce yourself to that tactical PT.
Right.
It's just making those introductions, and sometimes those serendipitous relationships just start to occur.
It's great to reach out via social media and email, but it's different to have that face of a name. So I'm glad you guys still do that in the section.
Yep.
So let's go clinical.
Okay.
Right? Return to sport after injury. Yep. That's got to be a big, big, big topic. When to do it. Every athlete is chomping at the bit to get out there. But if it's your responsibility as a sports PT, you want to make sure they wait long enough, but of course not too long.
Right.
So how do you approach this? Why is this a passion for you?
So part of it is I did my PhD working with ACL-related injuries, and ACL second injuries is really a hot topic right now. You're seeing it in conferences, in journal articles. There was just a recent post on Twitter that talked about in Australia, there's an epidemic of second ACL injuries, especially in young athletes, you know, between the ages of 5 and 15. And so to me, it's after people have that second ACL injury, if they have another reconstruction, their outcomes are significantly worse, and the odds of developing osteoarthritis down the road increase substantially. So if we can prevent the initial ACL injury would be ideal, but the risk of having a second ACL injury is astronomical compared to the first. So being able to identify those athletes who may be at risk of having a second ACL injury, I think, is paramount.
Yeah, you'll notice something too. If who's on Twitter and tries to follow physical therapy conversations on Twitter at all, gets it, like, you got to do a couple laps because it starts to get a little, I don't know, confusing. For a minute there, I thought we knew exactly who was going to get ACL injuries, and then someone else comes out with a paper and says, all those risk factors that we definitely identified, not so much. So what is it? What's the magic bullet? No pressure, but I'm here putting a microphone in your face, making you answer.
I think some of the confusion is we can't identify individual people who are going to get injured. We can identify individual risk factors. So I think that's the confusing part. People think we can identify individual people based on those risk factors, but we can't. We can only identify the risk factors that can predispose somebody to that. So, you know, it's just like that 90-year-old or that 100-year-old that smoked and drank their whole life, still alive.
Right.
That's the same thing. If somebody could have these risk factors and never get injured again, but their odds go up just because of those risk factors.
Right, because right now I'm reading all the stuff, like when you guys are in PT school and you're like taking patho and stuff, you start to feel like, oh,
I've had them all.
I have that. So like, I start going around circles with ACL. I'm like, I'm dumbfounded that I actually have either ACL right now, but I do, knock on wood, I have both. But that seems to be the hot topic at the moment. Was it always like this? I mean, I've been in PT for less than 5 years. Was this always the thing?
So when I started PT, you know, back in the late 90s, I'm dating myself, every surgeon would have told you that all their athletes got back to sport safely and they never retore. So it's only been really in the mid-2000s, where we actually started collecting the data.
So we just weren't keeping track?
We weren't even keeping track.
Oh, so okay. Well, that explains it.
So we weren't even keeping track, so we didn't even know who was getting injured. So now at least we have some of that data, but again, we can't really tell you who's going to tear or not.
All right, so now we're talking about ACL injuries. How about non-operative? What are you going to do there? That's something you wanted to talk
about. Yeah, so non-operative, I think, is an area that most PTs don't explore very often. And some of it is related to reimbursement, because sometimes you only have so many visits, and people want to pad those at the after surgery. But we know that if you do really good rehab before surgery, people's outcomes after surgery are substantially better. So you can get to that, past that point of where you've addressed those initial impairments. So you got the range of motion, some of their strength back. Well, you got to kind of push them to that next level, really start to incorporate some plyometric training, some neuromuscular reeducation training, some dynamic stabilization training before they have surgery or if they choose not to have surgery.
So there's a couple people in this conversation, right? You've got the patient.
Yep.
You've got their MD, their physician, mm-hmm. or their surgeon, right? You've got you, the PT.
Yep.
You've got outside influences like family, friends, other people who've either experienced this or not. How do you broach that? Because it feels like in this country, we want to get right to that knife, right? It's easier to do. I want to take the pill. I want to feel better. I want you to fix this for me and make me better.
Yeah.
So how do you broach that?
So one of the things that we do know that if people do go non-operatively, they actually can return back to some of their activities quicker than previously because they haven't gone through the surgery, which is tends to be a game changer when it's related to their impairments afterwards.
Whenever I have someone going for surgery and they're just like, well, I'll just feel super great after this. I'll probably be walking or jumping like a week later. I'm like, do you ever Google the surgery and check it out on YouTube? I'm like, do that. Let me know when you think you'll be hopping around
on
my foot.
Yeah, and I think people really, it's not really explained to them what the implications of this surgery are and the pain.
Black
the,
and Decker.
Yeah.
Yeah, power tools.
Tools.
Yeah.
Basically, it's carpentry.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, sometimes, you know, if you can discuss with people saying, you know, you seem to be one of these people that can cope well without an ACL injury. I think if you want to go back to some of your activities, at least for a short period of time, that might be an option. And I think once people start to understand that maybe they can go back, sometimes they continue to go on and say, my knee feels pretty good. I feel pretty stable. Maybe I don't need surgery right now. And then sometimes 5 years later, they're like, huh, I guess my knee feels pretty good. I didn't really need surgery.
What's one approach? What's one thing that you tend to focus on with a patient who has been told they need surgery that's really, you know, landed and stuck with them to maybe make them at least consider the non-operative route?
So I think I'll kind of flip that on you a little
bit.
Flip it. So for those people, I think that have chronic instability or they're going back to those high level sports, they probably should consider surgery. It's those other people that, you know, again, the weekend warriors, are those people
Jimmy,
like that.
You can say it's me. Yeah.
Joe Schmo.
I'm Schmo.
Jimmy Schmo. Are the ones that you can talk to and you can at least make the argument that maybe you don't need surgery, especially if it's an isolated injury, meaning they haven't had a meniscus tear or cartilage damage or something along those lines, where maybe doing it non-operatively may be a better option for you.
Got it. Okay. Last topic I want to bring up, clinical practice guidelines.
Yes.
Why is that something you get fired up about?
So
love the fact that you can point out like somebody gets fired up about clinical practice guidelines
yeah,
in
a
room and everybody's like, yeah, me too.
I never used to be fired up about it.
But now you are.
Yeah. It's only been, I think, the last couple of years. I think I've been involved in several clinical practice guidelines.
The creation of.
Yeah.
Okay.
The creation of, you know, several knee-related clinical practice guidelines. And I think I really started to get more interested in how it's being implemented in the clinic. We've spent all this time and money developing these practice guidelines that demonstrate the best evidence of treating specific injuries, and we don't even know if people are using them.
Right.
So again, we haven't really collected the data on whether or not people are using these or not. And I think, you know, if we can start to identify again, what are some of the barriers or what are some of the things that allow people to use these in the clinic, again, may help us develop better clinical practice guidelines in order to really improve patient outcomes. Because that's what it comes down to
right.
for me is helping people get back to the activities they want to get back to.
Right. I was talking with a professor from Arcadia University, Becky Craik, and she's big into research. Take a guess how long it takes for something to go from being published to actually be put into practice. So how many?
Eight.
Higher than eight. 17. 17 years. So like if you're on a committee and you're creating a clinical practice guideline, about 17 years, maybe, hopefully, someone's actually putting those into practice.
Hopefully.
So we got to figure that out. We got to research that.
I think that's one of the pushes you're actually starting to see from organizations like the APTA is really looking at implementation of research, not just the production of new knowledge,
right,
but the implementation of new knowledge. Because, you know, it's great to have all this research that's in these journals and it helps, you know, it helps me get tenure.
Yeah.
But it's not going to help our patients get better.
Publish or perish. Yeah, I got a lot of books, you know, just sitting around, but, you know, we want to make sure those those books, those published studies, get into practice.
Yes.
All right. You ready for your parting shot?
Yes.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation, their mission to rehabilitate lives by believing in the strength of people. They believe in their clients and their ability to achieve what they once thought impossible. Optimal function to rehabilitate their lives. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
Parting shot of wisdom. We give the guest a chance to for a mic drop moment, leave the audience here and out in the internet with something to remember you by. What's your parting shot?
You know, I think for me, it's really the implementation of research. You know, not just reading it, but putting it into practice. I think if people really start to put into practice what they read and really understand it and apply it to their patients, I think that'll really improve our profession.
Yeah, that's a critical step too, is not just reading it, but understanding it and saying, how can I actually apply this?
Right.
You know, for some reason, we're more and more connected with social media and technology, but I hear the term journal club in my clinic less and less.
Yeah.
Which is ironic. You know, more connected, but and yet we connect less. But I think that's a great point. Good luck with running for the sports section president.
Thanks. I'll know May 1st.
Fingers crossed. Let's hear it for David.
This is the PT Pinecast.
The show is brought to you by Arias Medical Staffing. Quite simply, I could talk on and on about Arias, and I do on the show, because they've supported us from the start. But what Arias does is they find you a job wherever you want to go. They've got placements, jobs for PTs in all 50 states. That's how many there are, right? 50? Right. 50 states in all settings. So where do you want to go? Check out where their jobs are. Talk to a recruiter. And again, want to make sure you know, this doesn't cost you, the PT, anything, all right? You just get to go do the thing you want to do, treat patients where you want to do it, and get paid for it. Arias is just the person to make that happen. AURUSmedical.com. That is where you can find them. Talk to a recruiter there. Paid travel and housing. Benefits go with it. Again, positions in all 50 states. A variety of settings. Go here, try this. Don't like the area? Go somewhere else. Short and long-term assignments. Even Con Ed money. You can travel from position to position or take some time off in between. Listen, you put a lot of work into becoming a physical therapist. Do it on your terms now. Travel the country getting paid to be a PT. AURUSmedical.com.
Hey guys, the Movement Maestro here, letting you know that Rock Tape is so much more than just a tape company. We are a movement company. Move stronger, longer with the world's best kinesiology tape, topical pain relief, mobility equipment, and protective gear. But that's not all. Learn from the best with our industry-leading continuing education courses. Want 20% off your first product purchase? Head on over to shop.rocktape.com and use the code PTPINECAST. Again, for the folks in the back, that's shop.rocktape.com and enter the code PTPINECAST. Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape, the movement industry's new standard for education.
And we're back.
Let's get back to the show now. Still in Philadelphia. Philly, are you there? We got a physical therapist who loves treating patients with knee and spine pain almost as much as she loves her alma mater, the University of Michigan. Lisa Hoglund, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me on.
So we're just talking to David about knees and ACLs, and you must have been just ready to jump in because you're all about the knee osteoarthritis.
Yes, and Dave and I have worked together before too. So yeah, and so the patients who wind up getting osteoarthritis from their ACL tear are the patients that I'd like to treat with their early knee osteoarthritis.
What's your preferred method of treatment? Like what's your thing that you're like, we should try this first and foremost?
Well, it obviously depends on their impairments. I mean, I think everybody would agree that's one of the main things that we look for. But overall, I think one of the things that research is showing is more important is the exercise that we do with these patients.
Yeah. How do you convince people who have pain to exercise through it? Because that will actually bring them to function on the other side. That's got to be one of the first things you've got to do, right? Buy-in?
Definitely. You have to create that therapeutic alliance with patients. And of course, I would say that's the case in all patients that we treat. So you're going to use your psychology a little bit and talk with them about how important it is to get stronger so that they can do the things that they want to do, whether it's even as simple as walking up the stairs.
Yeah. What are some of the things you guys have worked on? What are some of the research and sciencey stuff? Get sciencey on me.
That Dave and I have
done? Yeah.
Well, Dave was awesome and invited me to be involved with the clinical practice guideline.
Yeah.
That we're working on right now.
You see themes in the show. Yeah, I told you guys that.
Yeah, so we're working on right now for patellofemoral pain. And my interest in knee osteoarthritis was sparked by my older patients that I had who were diagnosed with knee osteoarthritis but had really patellofemoral pain. And now there's a lot more research coming out about patellofemoral osteoarthritis, and that's a particular area of interest for me.
What's the particular patient population age range that you really love to work with?
Well, who are your people? I love to work with all of them, but you know, I'd say the middle-aged and older adult. There's a lot of people who maybe they were active in sports and got knee osteoarthritis, or obesity, a huge problem in our country and growing, and that's one of the risk factors for knee osteoarthritis, as is female gender. So many of my patients are females, they're overweight, they're middle-aged, maybe they're active, maybe they're not, but they want to try to continue doing their activities. And, you know, I'm trying to convince them that they don't have to get total joint replacement, that they can do things to be more active and hopefully, you know, at least extend their amount of time before they get that.
Is the medical replacement, is medical surgery at the same time as being a great and wonderful thing for people who definitely need it, is it sometimes used maybe too often or seen as something we can just kind of throw at people with an issue like osteoarthritis?
Well, I think that, again, that's going to depend on the patient.
Notice
on
that
the,
theme too, especially
surgeon.
In PT school. It depends. Right. Depends.
No, but I mean, I don't know how many of the people sitting out here have had this experience, but there's so many times that I have patients come to me and friends. I'm a little bit older, so I have friends in this age group that tell me, you know, the doctor said it's bone on bone. Well, it's like once somebody says to you, it's bone on bone,
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Well, there's your psychology component.
Exactly. And that's the thing is that we have to talk with them and say, okay, it might be bone on bone, but that's not everything that it's all about. And I talk with them about the really not very great correlation between radiographic findings and what people feel and what people can do.
Right. I mean, I'm super excited when all my bones touch. So I can stand and walk. So sometimes I respond with that, but then they try to explain to me what bone on bone means. But then you get into the psychology part, right? Where I forget the name of the situation, but it's like the harder you try to convince someone that the world is flat, they're going to double down and go twice as hard why you're wrong. So when you start using words like radiographics and x-rays, sometimes I've shot myself in the foot.
Yeah. And, you know, I used to talk about x-ray findings a lot more with, and I'll say x-ray for patients instead of radiographs. But I used to talk about that a lot more with patients years ago. But there's more evidence coming out that, you know, we shouldn't go so much on that. And people can kind of get fixated on it. They look at that picture and, you know, they start to feel that, well, what am I going to do? Look how bad my knee is, even if they don't have that much pain.
Yeah, it's hard to turn that around once they've got that x-ray in their hand, right?
Right, right. And there are some people, and I had a patient just recently who said that, you know, they were coming because the doctor told them that they had to have PT first before they could get their knee replacement. So there are some patients who you're not going to be able to change, you know, their mindset and that type of thing. But, you know, I'm there to try to help people who are willing to try other things because they don't want to get a replacement.
I mean, that's what PTs are. That's our role, right? We're supposed to be there for the ones who are at least open enough to kind of take to listen.
I agree with you.
But it's hard when you just want to grab and be like, you should do this.
Yeah.
Just don't do that.
But you know, I mean, the things that Dave talked about with the surgery, and you mentioned Googling what the surgery is all about for ACL reconstructions, it's the same thing for joint replacements. And people think that it's a magic wand and they're going to have this new knee and everything's going to be wonderful.
Oof.
And they don't think about how much work is involved and, oh, and now it hurts my knee and I can't get it all the way straight. And, you know, and so they wind up, okay, that, you know, well, you know, they've had everything that they possibly could. And now, okay, I guess I just can't do those things anymore.
Right. And that's sad.
completely sad.
Especially when we know otherwise.
Especially, like I said, because of the obesity prevalence in our country growing, you have younger and younger people with knee arthritis, and they want to be active, and they should be active, even if it's just playing with their kids.
Yeah. I run marathons and do triathlons and stuff like that, and sometimes friends are like, hey, I think I want to do that. And I'm like, hey, come watch one with me. And if you're still super excited at the end of the day when you're watching people kind of like limp their way, I'm like, then you should do it. The same should be for joint replacement. You've got to sit in on one before you're like, I don't know, maybe I'll get one, right?
I've never thought of that, but, you know, I mean, at least maybe people should watch one on TV or something.
Yeah, show it to you. I mean, I've shown friends, you know, the surgeries they're thinking about doing. And you know what they usually say?
What?
Turn it off. well, I'll be asleep through all this, right? Well, yes, but that's going to hurt when you wake up a little bit.
So, but anyway, so I think, sadly, I think... there aren't as many people getting PT. There was just something that came out, and maybe you folks saw it, that there's, I think it was from the APTA, that the percentage of people being referred for PT by general practitioners has gone down a lot in the last 10 or 20 years. And I think, I'm not exactly sure why that's happened, but it may be that they're being referred to specialists first, you know, and then they're hearing the bone on bone. And
yeah. We've had this discussion, you know, multiple times. I'm interested in, I look at things through different lenses, and that's what you'll know. Even as students, you're going to bring something to this profession that only you can really bring, and you'll look at it through that lens, and you won't be able to, it's like once you learn how to analyze gait, like you'll never walk around a city again, like the same. You just be like, I can see that. So I look at it through a communications lens. You just said there are less and less people getting PT. Like we even talk about like the intricacies of like the words that even we use as therapists. It's like, well, PT is an active process. You don't get it. You do it. But we say that. I mean, I'm guilty of saying that as well. And then, of course, you know, when you have a hammer, the world is full of nails. If they get to a specialist first, what are they going to want to do? Saw and hammer. I don't know.
Absolutely right. And I shouldn't have said that. And
It's okay.
We do have so much to offer. And, you know, I'm always, you know, on my Facebook account, taking the get PT first things and sharing them and that type of thing. So especially with this opioid crisis that we have, there is research studies showing that when people go through an exercise program for knee osteoarthritis, the numbers of them taking prescription opioids declines.
Right. I mean, there's one excuse that we're outfunded, man. The drug companies have us beat 100-1 in terms of dollars. Doesn't matter. We have to do, this is what we're here to do. This is the profession we chose. You know, a guy I follow online, you guys, Gary Vaynerchuk, like super inspirational speakers. And like, I don't care. Like you're outnumbered 100-1 in terms of marketing dollars, you know, physicians or drug companies to PT. And you still want to help people. And it's not going to change tomorrow. It's going to get worse. We got to do it now. Different types of treatment methods. I know different schools, different PT schools teach different things. You have one particular that you kind of like a school of thought, an approach. Is it you, McKenzie, like getting into that?
That's my spine interest. I am a credentialed McKenzie practitioner, and I still see a ton of patients with pain, you know, of their spine. And I think that kind of my love for getting people doing exercise for their knee osteoarthritis and empowering them and teaching them what they can do really marries nicely with my interest in the McKenzie approach, because that's all about teaching the patient.
So when I came to PT school, I couldn't name three different types of PT. I was like PT, regular, young people, old people. That's all I thought. That's what I was like. Then I got in here. I was like, oh snap, there's all these different kinds. So I didn't even know like what type of school of thought my particular university taught. So like if you were to give someone who didn't know the 30,000 foot view of what McKenzie is, like what is it if you were going to put it on like a business card? Go. We didn't rehearse this.
That's a hard one. I guess McKenzie or mechanical diagnosis and therapy is a way of teaching people to pay attention to the symptoms that they have when they have their spine move in different directions. And when they find the particular movements that decrease and centralize or, you know, make the pain move to the center, go with those movements. And the movements that increase their pain and potentially make it move further out into their extremity, avoid those movements.
Yeah. And then do you use any other methods? Do you stick just with that or do you use kind of other school? Because they're really like, you know, they're frames of mind, right? Reference. Yeah.
I definitely use other methods, but that's where I start. There's some patients that it's not appropriate for because we don't see any kind of centralization or peripheralization, that type of thing. You know, sometimes people it's not appropriate for because they have so much kinesiophobia and You know,
that's
so
a new phobia.
Getting,
we should get rid of that one.
We should definitely get rid of that one. You know, but or language barriers, things like that.
Well, the reason I ask is that the only, because I think right now more and more people are getting into more and more things. I think especially the students today are coming at things very holistically. They're not bought in on one.
Right.
And I think that's the trend of that's a good trend that our field is getting into. Is it's fine if that's where you start. Everybody has a preference, especially like you said, it depends with certain patients. But then if that doesn't work, you go somewhere else.
Well, that's where I start. And I do teach this part. And some of my students could testify that I taught that approach. But I also taught, you know, spinal stabilization and a manual therapy approach. And then I kind of put it all together in the treatment-based classification system and exposed them to several approaches. And, you know, everybody's going to find the approach that works best for them. And, you know, you want to stick with it and you want to grow in that area, and then you'll get better. Yeah. If you're too eclectic and you're too random, you're not going to really become expert in anything.
Right. But you've also, you also mentioned before treating other things like lifestyle changes. Like really coming at it from both ends.
Well, and that is part of the McKenzie approach, because there's so much education on changing your lifestyle, your sitting posture, your working posture, all of those kinds of things. But it's definitely a lifestyle approach.
All right, Lisa, you ready for your parting shot?
Sure.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Their mission, to rehabilitate lives by believing in the strength of people. They believe in their clients and their ability to achieve what they once thought impossible. Optimal function to rehabilitate their lives. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
So if you were to leave the audience with one parting shot of wisdom so they can take hold close to them, what would it be?
So it's going to go back to my knee osteoarthritis patients. Don't be afraid to use weights, to use more resistance with your patients who have knee osteoarthritis, even if they're older. You know, pay attention to the symptoms, but we're not going to get them stronger unless we give them more resistance.
Load it. All right, let's hear it for this young lady right here.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jimmy McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.
Our home on the internet.
PTPinecast.com.
Created by BuildPT. BuildPT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
to providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what BuildPT can do for you today
at BuildPT.com. PT Pinecast supports Go Baby Go,
a national community-based research, design, and outreach program that provides modified ride-on cars to children birth to age 3 who experience limited mobility. Founded by Cole Galloway from the University of Delaware. For more information about how you can build your own cars or start your own chapter, visit udel.edu/gobabygo.